A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at UH1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Här kommer ett meddelande från stipendiet Årets hållbara artist. Det delas ut av Grammys och Oatly till svenska artister som engagerat sig i klimatfrågan. Tidigare har Malena Ernman, Magnus Carlsson och Annika Norlin utsetts till Årets hållbara artist. Vem tycker du ska få stipendiet 2020? Gå in på hållbarartist.se och nominera den svenska artist eller det svenska band som du tycker gjort något för planeten. Gör det senast den 6 januari.
Hello, this is Michael Monroe here and you're listening to me and Fredrik Strage talking about rock and roll and music and all kinds of things.
Thank you for coming to my home, Michael Monroe. This is a true pleasure.
It's an honor and a privilege. I love it here. A lot of cool stuff.
And you brought your harmonica. I was hoping you would do that.
I never leave home without it. I also have
nose flute.
A nose flute? I've never seen one like that.
Oh, no? Yeah, not, most people haven't. You blow it from your kind of like use your nose. You blow from the top hole here. And then you adjust the pitch with your mouth on the bottom hole here. So it's like a very simple. You can get all kinds of sounds. Every record I made, there's some nose flute purposefully in some part or another, doubling a guitar or doing, you know, something, some kind of effect, you know. Not just for the sake of having it. It's a cool instrument. You know, who needs a Moog and synthesizers and stuff?
I read this interview where you mentioned that if you're in Finland, people walk up to you all the time and ask you for an autograph. But if you're in the US, they will come up to you and say, "You're famous, right? You look famous."
Yeah, you are somebody, aren't you?
How do you react to that?
I laugh. It's funny because, in New York especially, say, "Hey, yo, Blondie, hey, Rockstar, come on, give me a dollar. But I think it's just hilarious. I think, yeah, what am I going to say? You look like you're somebody. Well, I hope I'm somebody, but, you know. So I just think it's amusing in a way, too. It's funny. You know, different countries have different reactions. And, you know, it's and for Finland, people who are into my work and stuff and know what I do and basically come to ask for an autograph or a photo, a selfie, whatever, that's not much out of my time. I don't mind at all because I never complain about that because some people say, "Oh, man, I got to do an autograph." I think that's great that people are asking me for it. I mean, it would be a bad thing for my career if nobody ever asked for my autograph or a photo selfie to get.
Your latest single is called Last Train to Tokyo, and you've had quite a lot of success in Japan.
Yeah, always.
Probably the biggest market for your first band, Hanoi Rocks.
Yeah, one of the biggest. I mean, Hanoi Rocks played there in 1983 and 84 and before we broke up, but then as a solo artist, I was even bigger than Hanoi. And, you know, in 80, they're not faking it album. It's really, really happening big time there. And I've been there. I probably toured there about, I was just counting one day, how many times I've been there. About, it's about 30 or so to that I've 30 times I've visited Japan and played some shows, and it's always been a great one of my favorite countries to tour, and really, and the people are really genuinely nice and considerate and kind, and they never get aggressive, or they never get like, you know, even when they drink, they don't get, you know, like some Finnish people or maybe English people get to a point usually where they say, all right, yeah, they get into a fight or something. Japanese people, they just giggle and then they pass out or something.
Yeah, they pass out because they lack something in their bodies to handle alcohol, I think. You know, I think it's like
I don't know that deep. I haven't looked into it that deep, but you're probably right. Whatever the case is, I love them people and love playing there. They're really passionate about rock and roll and really still love good music and sell physical product like CDs and vinyl. You know, one of the last countries in the world.
I once spoke to Dragan from the Backyard Babies, who he used to play the guitar in your band,
ex Michael Monroe band.
Dragan told me that Backyard Babies once received glass test tubes from Japan from fans who wanted them to send back sperm so they could literally have the Backyard Babies' babies.
Yeah, that's just revolting and disgusting. Oh, God. I pretend like I didn't hear. I'm trying to erase that.
So you haven't been asked for a sperm by Japanese fans?
I certainly
fans?
Have not, and I certainly wouldn't. I probably wouldn't even talk about it. I think that's one of those sleazy. Maybe that's what sleaze rock. Well, you know what sleaze rock is? I don't know.
You're supposed to be sleazy, aren't you?
That's somebody. Tells me, so you guys are playing sleaze rock? And I'm not a sleaze ball. I'm not a sleazy kind of guy. What the hell is that, sleaze rock? Come on. I'm not sleaze. I'm anything. I'm not sleaze rock. And all categories, I got to tell you, genres, all the names, like grunge and, you know, sleaze rock, metal, whatever. As soon as something has a name, it's over in my books. Yeah, so I'm introducing the next song. I was asked to pick 5 songs of all time that I wanted to play on the show, and this is one that came to mind. It's a band called The Virgin Marys, and they have a song called Bang Bang Bang.
Sun set at rest on the dirty road. Clock stopped dead and the sky explodes. I'm bloodshot and red and I'm feeling fine. So take that gun, girl, and blow my mind. That gun,
the Virgin Marys, where are they from?
From London, English. They're from England, I don't know which city, but this song was on a compilation that Slash put together for Classic Rock magazine called Radio Slash. It was like a collection of his favorite songs of all time, and it started out with my song 78. It was the first song on that CD. And Virgin Marys was like 6th or 7th song. I went through the other songs. There's one Rory Gallagher song, and this song came up, and I was like, wow, I hadn't heard it before. And the singer's got a great voice, and you know, to have a new singer like that, fresh new band, you know, they're quite young and up and coming. So I was like blown away. A great production, great everything. And that song is really killer, I thought. You know? So there's Virgin Marys for you.
Bang! Bang! Bang!
When did you start dreaming about becoming a rock star?
I never dreamed about becoming a rock star. I wanted to be a rock singer, a rocker. Stardom, if that comes, you get famous or whatever. Well, you do your own thing, you know. I wanted to be a singer when I was 8 years old.
You're wearing a belt that says rock star.
Yeah. Well, that goes without saying, in case I forget. Yeah, well, you know, I'm not saying that I wasn't a rock, that I'm not a rock star. I'm a rocker, and I'm a rock star too, because I'm, you know, once you get, but the thing is, you got to do it on your own terms, and you got to do your thing first without thinking about any stardom or stuff like that. Then if you get successful, that's great, but first you got to do your own thing on your own terms, and you know, be true to yourself and all that, and your integrity is the most important thing with this. So I'll be 8 years old, I saw Black Sabbath on TV live in Paris in 1970, and those guys were, there was a heavy sound, it was powerful, and I saw that crazy singer with the long hair, wild and free, and I said, well, maybe I could do that. Maybe I could even make a living doing that. And then I discovered Little Richard and Rolling Stones and Ramones and so on.
And you started a Black Sabbath-inspired band called Black Magic when you were really young.
Yeah, really young. I couldn't even, we couldn't even really play that even at that point. We also had a band called Hoople. What do you think it's that from? Mata Hoople, of course. My second cousin was a guitar player, supposed to be a guitar player in that band. But we were so young, you know, we couldn't really play yet. Also had a band called Madness, where I played guitar. It was a party band. Did my first show on stage at some school. But first gig as a singer without playing guitar was a Hanoi rock show in Finland in 79. Before the actual band started, we did a few shows with me and Nasty Suicide and a couple of Finnish guys. But anyway, so I got into rock and roll, and I've been there ever since.
You mentioned Black Sabbath. I have to ask you this because there's some kind of tradition in Finland to scream Soitaka Paranoid.
Play Paranoid.
Like they have, you know, in the US, people scream Freebird because they want to hear Freebird by Lynyrd Skynyrd. And in Sweden, people scream Spela Shoreline. Shoreline is a song by a Swedish indie rock band called Broder Daniel.
Finnish version is nowadays, I say, play Polaroid instead of Paranoid. So these people are so drunk, they don't know what the hell they're saying. Mike, Sammy, whatever the fuck, Andy, you're. Come over here. I have important thing to say. A selfie. Play Polaroid.
But do you get that too? Soitaka Paranoid?
I don't get that much because we have so many great songs that I haven't heard that at my own shows. I never heard that, but I've heard it said. That's for bands like, I guess, Popeda is a kind of band. I could imagine their audience. They're a great band, but they're a Finnish band. You sing in Finnish. They have the kind of audience that might, some guy, really drunk guy, might say that. But anyway, but I like Black Sabbath was, you know, one of my favorite bands. But then I discovered Alice Cooper and, you know, come on. I mean, this guy was the hero of, you know, for me, it was like the epitome of kind of a bit dangerous. He's the kind of guy that your parents wouldn't want you to like. And, you know, it was a bit of a threat to society and dangerous and exciting and, you know, all cool things. And he wore makeup, and him and Little Richard, between those two, I started wearing makeup. I see you have the Life and Crimes of Alice Cooper box set over there. Look at this guy, man. Let me grab this.
Yeah, I have the box set.
Yeah, I'm just looking at the book. I'll look at the booklet as we go along. Don't let it bother you.
Why don't we play one Alice Cooper track since we're talking about him?
You know, we gotta play something.
Could you pick something else?
How about Desperado? That was a tribute to Jim Morrison. They were drinking buddies. You know, Jim Morrison and Alice Cooper used to drink together. And when Jim Morrison died in 1971, I think it was a Killer album has this song Desperado, which is one of the coolest tributes to anybody I've heard. He's singing on the verses. He's kind of talking like Jim Morrison. It's like, I'm a gambler and I'm a runner, but you knew that. But if you check it out, in the verses, he's totally doing Jim Morrison's voice. It's beautiful to me.
Yeah, let's listen to Alice Cooper's Desperado.
Yes.
I'm a gambler and I'm a runner, but you knew that when you laid down. I'm a picture ugly stories. I'm a killer and I'm a clown. Step into the street by sundown. Step into your last goodbye. You're a target just by looking.
That is such a cool song. The lyrics are really, really cool. It's about Jim Morrison. Great tribute to him and Alice's. You know, you're a notch and I'm a legend. You're at peace and I must hide. What a cool line.
My hands are lightning up on my gun. My shots are clean. My shots are final. My shots are deadly. And when it's done, you're as stiff as my smoking barrel. You're as dead as a desert night. You're a Nazi.
Your real last name is Fagerholm. I was wondering,
Fagerholm, yes.
Are you related to Monica Fagerholm, the Swedish-speaking Finnish writer?
Not that I know of, no. Not
yeah, she's a famous author, and she just put out a book called Vem dödade Bambi? Who killed Bambi?
Huh, which the Sex Pistols.
It's a Sex Pistols reference.
Yeah, with that Temple Tudor thing. Who killed Bambi? But you know, there's Fagerholm is a pretty common name. But my great grandfather was friends with John Sibelius, the composer in Finland. They were pen pals, and he had took some musical theory lessons from Sibelius. He was an oboe player himself, a classical musician, and his son, my grandfather, was a cello player, who also played the saxophone for fun at nights at the nightclubs sometimes. And musical family, So my mother worked at the radio like my father did, and she just didn't, because my grandfather said to my mother, first you get a real job, and then you can play as much as you like. So, but I didn't take that advice.
Your father, Pentti Fagerholm,
yes,
worked at the radio, and I found this amazing stereo test that was broadcast in 1972.
Incredible, and now I'm impressed.
Yes, that's him. On ensisijaisesti auttaa kotikuuntelijoita tarkistamaan, että stereovastaanotin toimii asianmukaisesti. Seuraavassa kuulette metronomin tikitystä, jonka pitäisi kuulua ainoastaan vasemmanpuoleisesta kaiuttimesta.
I'm supposed to hear this only on the left side channel. It's incredible. I love that one. You know, I have this on a record. Another Hostile Takeover album has a song called No Compromise, No Regrets. And there's a middle section that's kind of like Pink Floyd-y kind of spaced out section. And then the stereo test can be heard there.
And that's a metronome, right?
Yeah, metronome, yeah. Now you should be hearing the metronome ticking on the left speaker. And then he says, now it should be on the right side. And then it should be in the supposed middle of the speakers. And you know, it's like a stereo test. It was on radio. It's pretty famous. And
Was your father and mother into your music?
My mother didn't like me leaving home because I was 17. I was underage, and I had two older brothers, and they were still living there. I was the youngest, so she probably wanted to hold on to me too, and so on. And didn't like me leaving, going out to Stockholm, and actually I left on my own. I didn't ask for anything. I just wanted my freedom. And first half a year, I didn't really let anybody know anything about me because I was living on the streets in Stockholm.
You lived on the streets in Stockholm?
Yeah, that's how we started with Hanoi Rocks. Me and Nasty Suicide and Sammy Alpha. Sammy Alpha, the bass player, and Nasty Suicide, the guitar player. We came over to Stockholm. There was a guy who was supposed to get us a flat, but he didn't come through. So we were homeless for 6 months, begging for change, and you know, didn't have any money, but we had a rehearsal, the drummer, the first drummer in Hanoi, Jip Casino, he had a rehearsal place in Universitet at the subway station. But you couldn't stay there overnight, otherwise we would have lived there. But we played there, you know, rehearsed there, and Andy, the other guitar player, Andy McCrory, he had a girlfriend. That's therefore he had a home. He had a house outside Stockholm, some nice villa. He never invited us over there, but we were happy. And, you know, I always say I started out with nothing, and I still got most of it left.
How did you pick your name, Michael Monroe?
Well, there was a guy who was the son of the Venezuelan ambassador in Finland. His name was Johnny, and he was a musician. He had a band called Stooners back in the day, and I used to hang out with him, and he asked my name, and I said, Macke. They used to call me Macke, not Matti. Macke was my nickname. So he said, is it okay, I'll just call you Mike? So he called me Mike or Michael. And then when we started the Hanoi Rocks, first of all, most people would not know how to pronounce our names because, you know, the Finnish or Swedish. And besides Marilyn Monroe, Alice Cooper, you know, they have stage names. So I had this T-shirt with Marilyn Monroe and some pills floating in the air, and it said "Some Like It Hot." And black leather pants. And that was what I was wearing most of the time. And I figured Monroe, she died actually the summer I was born, in 1962. She's died a couple of months after I was born. So maybe there was a connection or something, but yeah, she was always classy and stylish, and nobody came to something quality about her. So I thought Michael Monroe sounded good.
How about your band member, Nasty Suicide? That's one of the weirdest nicknames in rock and roll. Nasty Suicide.
Yeah, how about that?
I guess suicide is always kind of nasty, but
Nasty Suicide was, I don't know where it came from, but Nasty was really, he had like the bad luck charm, you know. He was walking on the street, if there's a bird that would shit on a car or something, it would land on his shoulder. You know, it was like always had some bad shit happen. It was kind of like it was a you know, Born to Lose kind of character, but he was the coolest, great guitarist and a great, but, you know, I had an accountant in New York who said, I want to meet this guy, Nasty Suicide.
He seems like a nice person.
He's a great guy. Still, me and Sammy Offa and Nasty still have the bond that was formed in the streets of Stockholm when we lived here homeless. There's a bond that was that really that never breaks. We still have that friendship and camaraderie. And Sammy Offa is really my blood brother, you know.
What about the name Hanoi Rocks? Was that like Chinese Rocks?
The song Chinese by, Rocks was
which
the
was slang for heroin, right? The
yeah,
Johnny Thunder song?
Chinese Rocks was Andy suggested that as a name for the band. And I said, well, it's already a song, The Heartbreakers, Johnny Thunders and The Heartbreakers, written by Dee Dee Ramone, apparently, however. But then he said, how about Hanoi Rocks? And I was like, wow, that's the coolest name ever. So that's the name of my band. So that's where, you know, that was the coolest name I could ever think of. I said, okay, no matter what, that was it. Hanoi Rocks.
Yeah, you're looking in the booklet to the, yeah, Alice,
the
Cooper.
Alice Cooper, the Billion Dollar Babies tour. Yeah,
I just wanted to ask you how people reacted to your glamorous look in Finland.
My glamorous look.
You know, well, did you have like raggare, like teddy boys?
They had,
like in
yeah,
Sweden?
Well, they had actually the James Dean kids. So horrible. They were the worst. Everybody. It was in the late 70s. They were kind of like a cross between the raggare and teddy boys and skinheads. And they were really prejudiced too. They were like really racist, and they would beat people up. Anybody with a little bit longer, you know, hair over on the, to their shoulders, they would like beat people up and burn their hair. And you know, there's a gang of them. You know, would jump on you and. At the railway station on the weekends, where it was like suicide walking through there. They're looking at me. Actually, when me and Andy walked through the railway station, they were like, huh? They didn't do nothing because they figured, oh, that guy, he's not a hippie. He's not a punk rocker. You know, they're so simple and stupid redneck. In their stupid redneck minds, they couldn't categorize us. So they were like, what's this guy with, you know, electric blue PVC pants and white mental hospital jacket with a big, huge dick in the back that Andy drew on it? I had my hair down to my waist. It was black on the bottom and blonde on top, and must have looked like a real freak. But, you know, that was too freaky for them. But, yeah, we had fights at some shows. Playing in Finland, you know, already, well, in the 60s, bands would go and play there. The rednecks would just, like, even if you had just long hair, you know, it was like they would come close to killing you. But us with Hanoi Rocks with our makeup and everything, we had some hairy situations here and there, you know. One time I woke up in the back of the tour bus and a window fell on top of me. And then I looked down the aisle of the bus and they're like, each window was coming in. There was like 10 rednecks with baseball bats and crowbars smashing up the whole bus. We couldn't continue the tour with the bus. We had to get a new bus for the next day. Well, we got out of there alive. I went with the bus driver to the local police. The next day he went to announce this what happened, and he said, oh, they're just kids from our village. They weren't being serious. They was only playing around. I said, what? They would have killed us if they would have caught us. I'd hate to see them serious. But yeah, there was a lot of stuff, a lot of gigs where we were just fighting with the audience.
Speaking of violent Finnish people, I wanted to play you a Finnish punk song.
Go ahead.
Mitä?
Ah.
Sapina.
Haukka perusjätkä.
Malka perusjatka.
Perusjatka, basic guy, basic dude.
And the sapina, what
sapina
does that
means
mean?
Like hassle or, you know, hassle, you know, stuff happening, something going on in the city, on the streets of Helsinki. There's a hassle or all kinds of crazy stuff going on in the streets of Helsinki.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com. Here's a cool fact.
A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
That guy was, he went to the same school as junior high with me. It was a little older, so it was like, I was in class 2B, he was in 3C. And then he became the guy with the chainsaw. Ralph Earn was the name of the guy who was behind this whole thing. It was the guy who wrote most of the songs. He had the piano. And the song Kills Eat the Kills, which was the first Hanoi Rock single, the other side of the first Hanoi Rock single, was also recorded on the Mauka Perusjatka album in a Finnish version, you know, with Finnish lyrics or something. I wrote some of the English lyrics with Andy. We recorded it with Hanoi then. But yeah, I played my first tour. I played saxophone. I had an alto sax, and there was this guy, Heppa Halme, who played tenor sax. And we went on tour in the Lapland, tour of Lapland for a couple of weeks back in 79, I think it was. Yeah. And so I got some experience as a touring saxophone player. It's a funny band. It was like 10 people in the band and stuff. That's some old ancient history.
I read the book All Those Wasted Years, mm-hmm. about your career, where
Hanoi Rocks.
There's a quote from the Foo Fighters guitar player who says that everything in Hollywood changed after you arrived. After that, everyone was wearing the same kind of hair, clothes, and makeup as Michael Monroe.
Yeah.
But you kind of created this male bombshell rock and roll look that a lot of people were inspired by later on.
Inadvertently, probably. Perhaps that's what they say. And I think whatever they call it, this hair metal thing, I do not. I won't accept responsibility for that. I mean, to me, a lot of bands came out who were just mainly into the superficial side of it. I mean, the bands that played their hairspray cans better than the instruments, they weren't cool in my books. To us with Hanoi Rocks, it was the attitude, the music came first and always and the playing before. But in America, you know, in Hollywood especially, I've seen many, many, many interviews where they ask some guitar player or rock musician, why did you start playing rock? You know, playing guitar. Why did you start playing guitar? So many of them say, it's for chicks, man, to get chicks. I mean, is that your motivation? I mean, Jesus Christ, you're lucky if you can play a little on the side. You know, it's just crazy.
So to me, what was your motivation? What was like the biggest? Just to express yourself or to feel?
Just to be myself. I have my own personal style, and I was influenced by different, you know, people. Little Richard, Alice Cooper, whoever. Rock and roll to me is about being an individual, doing your own thing, and being a sort of your own person, the master of your own life. It's about individuality to me, and the punk thing was also a good kick in the ass when it came around. That's the only word I like to use as a musical direction, because it was a good kick in the ass for boring, complacent millionaire musicians who was living in their castles and were out of touch with reality, playing 20 minutes long self-indulgent solos, putting people to sleep. And then here comes the Ramones, and there comes the Clash and the Pistols, who couldn't play much, but they still had something to say. They wrote lyrics that meant something, and they had balls in their sound. They weren't virtuoso players, but they, like the Ramones, they saved rock and roll when they came out. You know, 2 minute songs and a wham bam, thank you, man. And the funniest lyrics is very smart, so intelligent and smart enough to be dumb, you know. That's an art. So that was to me about rock and roll being an individual and not like copying somebody's look. So I'm glad, thank God for Guns N' Roses, because they had their own thing. They had their own sound. They were a bit heavier than Hanoi, more like an Aerosmith kind of heavy. But they took the right influence from Hanoi, by, like they always quoted Hanoi as one of their influences. They took the attitude and the right side of things. And they always mentioned in the press, you know, Hanoi rocks. There's some other bands that were kind of like, well, oh, Hanoi who? No, this is our own style. Well, I'll show you an example. Yeah. The band Poison. The guy who produced their first album came up to me at a club in New York when I just moved there in 86 and said, oh, you're Michael Monroe, right? I just wanted to apologize to you about Poison. I said, what? Poison? What? You put something in my drink? I said, no, the band. You know, when your drummer died and you guys broke up, we took your thing and we made millions, sold millions of records. I said, excuse me? You took our thing? Oh, man, is that what you were trying to do? Don't worry about it, man. You didn't even come close, man. It's like, you know, you missed the whole point completely, so don't worry about it. My sleep is untroubled. I wish you the same. Nice to meet you. Yeah, so there you go. Guy feels guilty. I mean, you know, I got nothing against making money, but first you got to do it in your own terms and not fake it. You know, phony rock and roll is a crime, and then a lot of bands actually aren't that great. They're not for real and not authentic and from the heart like we are, like I am being. Then they become huge million sellers. Millions of fans can be wrong and often are. So then people think that's real rock and roll, and that's not true. So that's the only bad thing about that kind of superficial, phony, pretentious bands. But there's a lot of great bands out there. You know, Jane's Addiction were great, weren't they? And Warrior Soul were one of my favorites. You know Corey Clark, Warrior Soul? Oh, man, I wish we could play 10 songs here, man.
So, you mentioned the tragic death of your drummer, Razzle, which was recently... part of the movie The Dirt about Motley Crue, which you didn't see, right?
No, I did not see, and I have no interest in seeing it. Let's not waste any more time talking about that. I just don't want to open that can of worms. I'm not interested in that band, their book, or their movie, or anything about that. I think I like musical. I'm more interested in musical contributions to the music scene, musically. And musically, I don't find anything doesn't do anything to me. You know, with the the kind of music they make, so
still
yeah,
I
not interested.
I noticed that on YouTube under a lot of Hanoi Rocks clips, you can see people writing in the comment section, "The Dirt brought me here." So apparently, you're getting, you know.
Oh, I should be thankful.
No, I don't mean that. I just mean that you know the movie might have an effect on people exploring your past, at least.
They might get interested in saying who was Razzle, and maybe they'll find out that there were also two teenagers who got paralyzed from the neck down in the same accident, and there wasn't only.
Yeah, people don't talk about that, right?
I don't know. I heard that it's not in a movie anyway. So whatever, that's their version of whatever. I'm not. It's just like you know, old sore memory, and I'd rather not just. Did not go there. My whole life went, you know, exploded to bits. I didn't know what the hell to do. And, you know, I lost everything and had to start over. But incredibly, I'm still here to listen to everyone tell me about it.
And then the same thing happened like a few years afterwards when your dear friend Steve Bators was killed in a car accident in Paris. Let's listen to Lords of the New Church.
Yeah.
That's one of my favorite bands. And I'm wearing a Lords of the New T-shirt.
I see
today.
That was the first thing I noticed when I met you. That's a great, great, good move. What are you going to play? Russian Roulette?
Yes.
Yes. Thank you.
The song has a lot of references to the movie Apocalypse Now.
Yeah.
And it seems to be about like going to the movies and kind of entering fantasy world. Because he sings that I'm the Leicester Square Kid, I'm Superman. And Leicester Square in London is, you know, where they have a lot of movie theaters.
Yeah.
So, but I'm not sure what the movie,
Living
the song
Frank,
is.
Living Frank Coppola's dreams.
Yeah.
Out of my mind, I'm feeling me. Yeah, I mean, I'm sure Steve's also leaving stuff open to interpretation in that song. Russian Roulette was, surely it's Apocalypse Now, a tribute to Apocalypse Now, at least with the helicopter in there. I remember when this video came out, Steve invited me and Sammy Alpha went to their office in Portobello. Steve had just said, you want to come and see our new video? They just got in their office. I went to see the video for the first time ever at Miles Copeland's office in Portobello, where he had his management company, IRS, and his brother had a booking agency, FBI, and then he managed also a band called The Police, and FBI and IRS, and CIA was also, the record company was IRS, and Miles Copeland's management firm was called CIA. I forgot what the abbreviation was from, but yeah. I get a head full of Hendrix, I feel okay. I'm a late night thriller, I'm Miss Lorraine. Out of my mind, can I come to play? Hey, 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 begin the movie. Steve was a dear friend of mine, and actually when Hanoi Rocks broke up in 84, after Razzle died in December 9th, beginning of 85, Sammy Alpha also left the band, so there was no future for Hanoi, and I just wanted to make sure the band is stopped with its name intact, with the integrity intact, if we would have continued with that name and with the new... two new people that was supposed to replace Razzle and Sammy. It was impossible. Nobody could replace them. We were like a family, so it wasn't going to work. But I just wanted to make sure that the integrity was maintained, that if you're going to continue without me, you're not going to use that name. So, and that's why Hanoi Rocks has the respect of, there was at least, there had to be one band that doesn't do just anything for money. So I'm proud of the legacy of Hanoi. But I moved in with Steve Bader's around the time. I was taking care of his cat, Ziggy, when he was on tour. And then eventually I moved in. I said, I might as well share the rent, we'll save some money. And moved in with Steve Bader's. And then Johnny Thunders moved in with us as well.
Well, that seems like a healthy couple to hang out with.
Yeah. Well, those are the only friends I had until little Steven came into the picture. And that was different. He was anti-drug and all that. And it was great. The Sun City Project. It was
You were part of the Sun City Project.
Yes. The Artists United Against Apartheid, part of that band, including Miles Davis, Bruce Springsteen, Bono, Bob Geldof, Keith Richards, Ronnie Wood, Bob Dylan, and Nona Hendrix, Run DMC. So many cool people on that record.
Let's listen to it.
Okay, yes. It was actually a song and a video to make people aware. It was raising awareness about what was going down in South Africa at the time when Mandela was still in jail and the apartheid was really at its height. And there was a holiday resort called Sun City where they had bands come in and play, and they paid the bands like millions, like a huge amount of money as a salary. But then while you would go and play there, you're supporting the racist government. So it was like there was a conflict, and little Stephen went to visit South Africa. They said that please send a message to the people here in the who would that nobody should go and come and play there. To all the bands in the West. And they said, please send this message. So he wrote that song. I don't care what you pay. I ain't gonna play in Sun City. And after that, no band or artist could go to Sun City and play there with a clear conscience anymore. After that, and to me, that was really a. The first thing I did after Hanoi had broken up, so I was like, with all these people, Stephen flew me and Steve Bader's also. Me and Steve Bader sang backing vocals on it. And Joe Ramone also was part of it. Jimmy Cliff, all these
cool, Dylan,
the coolest.
Even.
Bob Dylan as well, and Ringo Starr, and Zach Starkey, his son, and everybody who was, all the biggest and coolest names in rock and in the music business.
It's a great protest song. It's even better than Swedish Metal Aid, Give a Helping Hand.
Yeah, this is a great, the premiere of the video was shown at the United Nations building, and Jesse Jackson was there, came to shake our hands and prayed with us, and And Little Steven had a speech there. And to me, it was like, okay, this is where I belong. That's when I decided, Washington Square Park was where they were shooting the group scene. And it was almost a riot there because the word got out that Bruce Springsteen is there and Bono's there. And the cops were really having trouble holding the crowd because they were told originally that Little Steven's just shooting a video there. They didn't know there were all these superstars there and stuff. So it was great. That's when I decided to move to New York and start over because London had become sad for me because Razzle's passing. So I figured, okay, I'll start over and, you know, in New York, I'll move there. And that's when I moved to New York in the end of 85, and I lived there 10 years in the same flat in Manhattan, East 3rd Street on the Lower East Side, the Hell's Angels block, between 1st and 2nd Avenue. I lived there for the following 10 years.
The Hell's Angels block?
Yeah, 10 years I lived there across the street from the Hell's Angels, New York City Hell's Angels.
So did you hang out with them?
Well, yeah, I was on the good side. As a matter of fact, my debut solo gig in America was at the Hell's Angels block party on the street. They blocked off the street usually for 4th of July, Independence Day. And the cops gave him permission, and then they had a stage there, and they had an American flag from hanging between the buildings, and with their logo, Hell's Angels, New York City. When you look from the end of the block, you can see the flag and their logo, and you know, I of course support your local angels. I went to play. I put a band together, and I played about an hour's worth of, you know, with all the 100 Harleys, lined up on the street, and they actually had the. The flag was my friend Eddie, who was the treasurer of the club. He said he came knocking on my door in the morning. He said, "Yo, Mike, can you use your fire escape?" And I said, "Okay, go ahead." So they had another angel on the other side in the other building rigging up this flag. And I was like, really, really worth seeing. It was 2 days and nights of complete noise. It was like war zone. You know, there's M80s, you know, quarter stick of dynamite worth of, you know, big explosions and stuff. And then also I had the opportunity, since I knew Little Steven. Little Steven's solo stuff were really important. Voice of America and the same as Steve's Lords of the New Church. Your lyrics, your deadliest weapon, your tools for positive action. So then Steve had Little Steven come over and produce the Lords of the New Church, Hey Tonight and Lord's Prayer, which was written by a TV advert. Me sitting there after Hanoi has gone and all my life was like in pieces, sitting there with Steve Bader's and Little Steven and working on the lyrics for that song, Lord's Prayer. I thought, these are the two people I need to be. I don't need to know anybody else. These are the two people I need to be with. I'm in the right place right now. And Steve was really the only friend, and then Steven became my friend. He'd never heard of Hanoi. Steve turned him on to Hanoi Rocks. Says, "Whoa, what a fantastic band. What's happening now?" I said, "Well, we broke up. Our drummer died," and so on and so on. And since then, he was really supportive of my solo career. So part of the reason I moved to New York was really Little Steven. So Steven had a gig at the Ritz downtown, and he had Bruce came out. His second album after the Voice of America, Freedom No Compromise, had a cool duet with Bruce and Steven singing. It was called Native American. So Bruce came to sing that song live at the Ritz, and so I met him at the Sun City too, Sun City project also as well. So I could sort of know him that way. So when I was leaving the club, the Hell's Angels vice president was downstairs with another angel at the bar and saying, you know, "Hey, Mike, you know, you're not going to leave without having a drink with us, right?" I said, "Okay," twist my arm. So I said, "What are you doing here?" He says, "Oh, he wants to see," because he knew that Bruce was going to walk out of the club that way. So he was going to just see him because he was such a big fan. So when Bruce showed up, I pulled his sleeve. I said, "Bruce, would you say hello to my friend here?" And introduced him to the vice president of the Hell's Angels. And Bruce is such a nice guy. He talked to him like at least a half an hour, 45 minutes. At the bar there. It was really, really sweet guy. So after that, especially the angels were, "Okay, Mike, whatever you need, just stick your head out the window." The noisiest and the safest block in the city it was.
Let's listen to a song you recorded with Guns N' Roses.
Yeah. Now she said, "I'm sick in the head. Yeah, you ain't
Now, you were really close to the Guns N' Roses when they, when they became like huge. On they became really, really, really big, like the biggest rock band in the world. Did you feel that you wanted that kind of success for yourself, or did you feel that you might, you know, lose your sanity if you became that huge? Because, you know, something happens to people when they reach that level sometimes.
Yeah, I never had that problem, you know. I was always, to me, the most important thing was to maintain my, never to sell my soul and keep my feet on the ground and stay true to myself and never get lost in the trappings of fame, you know, basically, because it happens easily and it can be confusing when you got so many yes men around you. But to me, it was like, even if I became a millionaire and one of the biggest names in the world, it would mean nothing to me if I turned into an asshole in the process. So that was more important to me than anything else, was to not to lose myself. So it was easy for me to handle. I never complained, like I say, I never complained about success, but as long as you do it on your own terms and not compromise for the wrong reasons just to make money or to get famous, you know, it would never occur to me. So I wasn't afraid of that, but I must say Axel has had a lot on his plate. I mean, it's really not an easy thing to deal with when he has such a big name and he's so huge in the world. You know, never know why people want to be your friends or whoever, you know, is like who's close to you. I mean, you know, sure, look at Michael Jackson, what happened to him, you know, people have after his money and stuff. And I don't know, it's crazy. It's a crazy world, but I could handle it. I got nothing against being famous and you know, big and stuff like that. But then again, I'm happy to be in. Money never meant that much to me. I get by, you know, and these people also have the same bills, just in a bigger capacity. By the way, I never felt you know, bitter or anything. I'm just maybe cynical. I like my coffee bitter and dark, like my personality.
It's such a cold, cold world. It's a bold, bold world.
Yeah, people that don't dig people are drag.
This band, The Undisputed Truth, we found this album called Higher Than High. There was this five guys, one girl and four guys with the platinum blonde afros floating in space with like silver shiny suits and platform boots with the microphones and microphone cords in neon colors, and it was called Higher Than High. I was like, this got to be something else. And we listened to the record, and it was the best, coolest funk ever, you know. It's from the early 70s. And this song, Ball of Confusion, has been covered by many people, Temptations as well, but this is the best version, hands down the best version of Ball of Confusion that there is, in my opinion. So The Undisputed Truth, Ball of Confusion.
Demonstrates obligation to our nation. Well, that's what the world is today. Yeah, yeah.
That's one of the best songs ever. I mean, the statement, the lyrics, it's about more true than ever in the world today. Well, of confusion.
Revolution, revolution, gun control, sound of soul.
Shooting rockets to the moon, kids growing up to soul.
Politicians say more taxes will solve everything. Well, and the band play on.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
You have a line on your new album where you sing, "I ain't Elvis or Jesus, but I got a pretty face."
Well, I used to have. Anyway, well, I do it, yeah.
Yeah, I was thinking of your looks, and has anyone ever told you that you look a lot like the German film star Klaus Kinski?
Are you serious?
Germany's Marlon Brando, you know, who was their...
Yeah, I know who Klaus Kinski is.
Their greatest actor.
He's a creepy-looking guy, man. Well, I don't know how to take that.
Yeah, that was a compliment. He was Brando, Jesus Christ.
Okay, so he has character. But you know, Elvis and Jesus, okay, I like that. I always dig Jesus' style. Satan sucks. You know, I never was into
You prefer
that.
Jesus.
I prefer Jesus, and I ain't walking on water like Jesus did, but I know a trick or two. That's what that line means in the same song. It says, I ain't walking on water, you know, but I got a trick or two. I got a couple of tricks up my own sleeve. Not as impressive maybe as walking on water, but that's what the song is about. It's about positive mental attitude. And from the heart of the city to the out of the way, everybody's pissing on their own parade. Pissing on their own parade is like, that means... People are voting for things like Brexit and Trump, and then they complain about how everything's all screwed up and everything sucks. And then running on the PMA, positive mental attitude. So that's kind of what that song is about. One man gang, me, myself, and I. And my band, you know, has the name. Michael Monroe is the name of the band as well. So that, therefore, I thought it was an appropriate name for the album. Little Feet, one of my favorite bands. Oh, actually, this album, Sailing Shoes album, was the best album they made, and it was produced by Ted Templeman, who actually in later years he produced the best Van Halen stuff with David Lee Roth and stuff. So this was in 1972, and I used this drum sound as a reference when I'm mixing in the studio. This is one of my references for a drum sound. This is huge. It's great.
It's funny, that's the kind of, like, drum loop that Run DMC would sample.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, it really has that full Run DMC sound.
Yeah.
You know, you could rap over that beat.
It's bigger than John Bonham. I mean, it's really, I mean, surely the snare is tuned down pretty much, but it's a huge, big sound. And you can hear the cymbals are kind of like Charlie Watts. They go, they're spread, like, really, really fat sound. That's one kind of sound, and... I know so much cool stuff that these guys could sample if they knew what I know. But yeah, it's true. It's funny, you know? People sample stuff. I'd rather be the originator. Frederick, I love chatting to you. This is such a great time talking to you. I wish we had a whole day. I wish we could play, 30 songs instead of 5, or maybe even 50. But unfortunately, I have a tight schedule today of other interviews, although this is so far my favorite. The first one. No, I'm flying to Paris at 7, so I got a pretty tight schedule. Otherwise, I'd love to stay here.
Michael, it was a true pleasure having you here. Good luck in Paris, and thank you for being on... this podcast.
Thank you for having me on this podcast, and hopefully people will get something out of that music too, and hope you enjoyed our chat. Great meeting you and getting to know you, man. Frederick rocks. All right.
Oh, you're too kind.
Yes.
Well, you know that I ain't...